In the shop, you know, we worked piecework. It was very, very hard work.
It was a very dirty place. We used to see rats walking around the shop. But rats, not mice, but rats.
I went in to work to the Triangle. And at that time, I made there already $12 a week.
They all young girls were there, and girls to be married, engaged, and everything.
As I recall, the fire started on the 8th floor.
Hey, this was a Saturday when the fire started. We got off at 4 o'clock.
I saw the entire 8th floor as a flame.
The people, all bodies, oh, it was terrible. We got sick. The men took us over right away.
On March 25th, 1911, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory burned. The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory occupied the 8th, 9th, and 10th floors of the Ash Building on New York City's Lower East Side. Workers for the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory were just getting ready to leave for the day when the smell of smoke started to rise from underneath the long cutting tables. As the flames spread, workers frantically searched for a way out. Some tried the flimsy fire escape. Others made their way down the narrow stairwells. But on the 9th floor, one of the two exit doors was locked. Women and men trapped by flames were pushed closer and closer to the tall windows that looked out on the street below. As a crowd gathered and firemen arrived, it became clear that there was no way to rescue those at the windows. 62 people, in the space of about a half an hour, jumped from the 9th floor. No one survived. 146 people died in the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, and no one was ever held responsible.
I think what you have to do is look at the labor conditions in the New York City garment industry.
Robert Wesser, author of A Response to Progressivism.
This was an industry that was highly competitive.
Standing in the back of you and watching you every minute what you worked to drive like a slave.
It was mostly a small shop industry. For example, Triangle Shirtwaist Fire had what, maybe 500 employees? It was a relatively small operation, as were most of these concerns in the east side of New York City.
You had to be at your work and not to talk to anybody while you were working, not to eat anything at your machine. You were not allowed to do that.
They were very competitive. The margin of profit was low. The employers had to keep wages down. They skirted laws and regulations that had to do with fire prevention, sanitation code.
We used to see rats walking around the shop.
Young women, of course, were either self-supporting or they were helping to support their families. And they had to work in whatever conditions basically were provided for them.
I used to wait 6 days a week, from 7 in the morning to 7 in the evening.
We worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory was typical of many garment manufactories of its day. The women and men that worked in Triangle were mainly Jewish and Italian immigrants struggling to earn enough money to sustain a basic standard of living. Pauline Newman came to the United States with her family in 1901, and at the age of 10, Pauline got a job at the Triangle.
We started work at 7:30, and during the busy season, we worked until 9 o'clock in the evening. My own wages when I got to the Triangle Shirtwaist Company was $1.50 a week. during the surface making strike in 1909, I had worked myself up to $6. People were afraid, actually. You were not allowed to sing. You were not allowed to talk to each other. Oh, no. They would sneak up behind you, and if you were found talking to your next colleague, you were admonished. If you keep on, you'll be fired. They were the kind of employers who didn't recognize anyone working for them as a human being.
In November of 1909, shirtwaist workers went out on strike. Somewhere between 20 and 40,000 women workers walked picket lines to protest the long hours, low wages, and dangerous working conditions of the garment trades.
Well, of course, in 1909 there was a very substantial strike involving the shirtwaist workers. Unfortunately, that strike turned out not to be terribly successful.
Although the strike failed to significantly affect conditions in the factories, it strengthened support for the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union. And the women workers who had led the strike gained confidence in their abilities as labor organizers. One of these women was Pauline Newman.
We didn't gain very much at the end of the strike. I think the hours were reduced to 56 or something like that. It was a reduction. We got a 10% increase in wages. And I think it was just the best thing that the strike did was to lay a foundation on which to build. And people built and built and built until today. We have probably the strongest and most progressive union in the country.
The International Ladies' Garment Workers Union was one of several groups working to reform labor conditions. Since the turn of the century, reformers had tried to make people aware of the terrible conditions of industry.
All of these organizations have been working extremely hard to arouse public opinion, which was very difficult to arouse in those days when you had a New York City press in particular that was relatively conservative. Even the New York Times is a very conservative New York newspaper when it came to labor and industrial conditions.
The Triangle Shirtwaist Company was located in a loft building at the corner of Washington Place and Green Street in New York back around 1911.
Leon Stein, author of The Triangle Fire.
And it occupied the top three floors of a 10-story building. The fire apparently broke out at the moment when work stopped on that Saturday afternoon.
As I recall, the fire started on the 8th floor, just about the time when the machines, 5 o'clock, at that time we worked Saturday till 5 o'clock.
Hey, this was a Saturday when the fire started. We got off at 4 o'clock.
The fire was a terrible tragedy, and it originated probably through some human carelessness on the 8th floor, which was the lowest of the three floors in which the firm operated. It originated at the cutting table, I think. And it spread in very rapid order.
And I went over to the elevator. I heard some noise. So I thought to myself, I guess the elevator is out of order again. I walked down the stairs from the 9th and 8th floor. When I went down, I saw the entire 8th floor is aflame. I didn't know this is the first time I saw a fire in this country. I was only 3 months.
Everybody was holding the banners. So many, there was about 150 people there. We all tumbled down. When we got there, the firemen wouldn't let us out.
There were peculiar things about this fire. It didn't move, for example, from the 8th to the 9th and then to the 10th floor. It moved from the 8th to the 10th and then down to the 9th. A fire has a peculiar path sometimes. It laps. It doesn't progress chronologically, so to speak, and it lapsed from the 8th to the 10th floor and sort of engulfed the entire 9th floor. And that is one reason why virtually all of the girls on the 8th floor escaped, virtually all of the people on the 10th floor escaped. On the 9th floor, most of the 146 who died in this fire worked at that time.
I really can't tell you what had the fire started. But I know it started on the 8th floor, and it spread rapidly on the 8th floor. Most of the people of the 10th floor and the 8th floor were saved. I think all the victims were from the 9th floor because that door was blocked.
Perhaps you'll visualize the 9th floor of this factory as being made, as being filled chiefly by 8 long rows of sewing machines. These went the length of the shop. The fire took the progress that cut off one escape down a freight entrance staircase. The other door, there were two doors on the floor, the other door was locked because at going home time in Triangle, all workers had to pass through one exit door at which there was a watchman posted. And the girls had to open their pocketbooks and submit to the indignity of a search.
The doors were locked. Every night when we used to go out to the shop, it used to be a group of girls that there from the shop, like, you know, I, that should examine you, your bosom, your panties, or anything. If you don't take out any lace or cotton or blouse, the men used to be examined and the women used to be examined.
There were two exits, but they kept one door locked because every night when we went home, each girl had to open her bag and show the men that they didn't steal any lace or thread or material, and so on and so forth. So, if that door would have been open, I'm positive there would be no casualty. And there were no men, very few men. Perhaps if there were men, they would take a machine or hit the door.
They're all locked. They lock them all. What do they lock it for? I don't understand.
If the door on the 9th floor would have been open, I think most of the people would have been safe. It's that blank door on the 9th floor.
Most of these girls were trapped in the rows between the sewing machines, and the fire came down the length of those rows and almost pushed them literally to the windows. There was no getting by the flames, and these girls were back closer and closer into the windows.
I wanted to go back and get my sister, but while I turned back, there was a fireman right behind me. He grabbed me by my shoulder. He says, "What are you doing here? Where are you going? I says, "I want my sister's up there. I want to go back, save my sister." He says, "You better go down if you want to save your life." But I went down on the 7th floor. Mm-hmm. And on the 7th floor, I stopped. I couldn't go back already because the flames were all over, you know. I couldn't pass anymore.
By the time the firemen arrived, the civilians in the street were improvising attempts at rescue, but these were pitifully ineffective. They were desperate measures. Men grabbed horse blankets and whatever else they could find and tried to use them as nets. When the firemen came, they opened their nets, but unfortunately the drop was from the 8th, 9th, and 10th floor, and by the time a body reached the level of the sidewalk, it was traveling at a ferociously fast pace, and the nets were completely ineffective. The Company 20 came with the highest ladder that the fire department of the city of New York had. Unfortunately, it reached to the 6th floor only.
Some more firemen came up and they told me to walk down, and when I came down, I saw already quite a number of people jumping from the windows.
When they jumped, they had no choice. They had to jump. That was the only way out.
And when we got down, we saw the 3 flights burning. I says, "But good, were we up there?" We couldn't imagine. The 3 flights were, the wind was blowing all up and everything was caught. Mm. From 1, 2, 3, the 3 flights, the office and everything were burning. Mm-hmm. 3 flights were burning.
8, 9, and 10.
My God, we never thought we were up there. We were all very nervous and crying. My God, I was cold. I had no coat or nothing. The people, they're all... Our bodies, it was terrible. We got sick. We had the men took us away right away. You know, some of them went down with those, you know, those little glasses. They went right through that. That was a sight to see.
my sister was burned to death. She was so badly burned that we couldn't recognize her.
What was your sister's name?
Esther.
But you sit with young people, 9 months, machine by machine, you know, the right machine is from this side and across the way it was another machine. And you get acquainted with, for 9 months, with young people. That some of them had diamond rings, they're supposed to get married in June. The boys used to work daytime and go at night to school, and they had the hopes they'll be an engineer, they'll be a doctor, they'll be a lawyer, they'll be something. You know, young, intelligent children, each and every one of them was no dumbbells. And the fire broke up, the doors were locked, there was no fire escape, we had to escape on the door. 146 children were burned, then not to recognize and accept. Hundreds and hundreds of people were taken to the hospitals. They sprang from the windows down, you know. Oh, it was a tragedy for years and years.
New Yorkers were stunned by the fire. One of those who witnessed the tragedy was Francis Perkins. Perkins would later be Franklin Roosevelt's Secretary of Labor. She, like other New Yorkers, were profoundly affected by the sight of the fire. This was recorded at the 1961 memorial of the fire.
I'm one of the very few people still alive who not only remember the Triangle Fire, but who saw it. For I was visiting a friend on the other side of the square that bright, fine spring Saturday afternoon, when we heard the fire engine, and hearing them on a second alarm, we rushed out to see what was going on and saw the smoke pouring out of the ash building. We rushed into the square. We got there just as they started to jump. And I shall never forget it, and the frozen horror which came over us as we stood with our hands on our throats, watching that horrible sight. Knowing there was no help, and yet they came in twos and threes sometimes, jumping together in a kind of a hope for courage in their desperation. No one survived. The life nets were broken. The firemen kept shouting to them not to jump, but they had no other choice. The flames were behind them. For by this time, the fire was far gone.
It's important to remember the setting. This fire takes place in New York City, and New York City was the media capital of the nation.
Richard Hamm, Associate Professor of History at the State University of Albany.
Because it was a media capital, and because it was dramatic and a horrific cost of life, it was news. The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire was news all across the nation, and a common thread that runs through all the commentaries that come out of the fire is that someone should be held responsible for the loss of life.
The Triangle Fire was a tragedy which brought to the attention of the entire community the terrible lot of the sweatshop worker.
Out of that whole episode, there came a self-examination, an examination of conscience, in which the people of this state saw for the first time the value, the individual value and worth of each one of those 146 people who fell to their or were burned in that great fire.
A week and a day after the fire, the Women's Trade Union League held a mass meeting. Rose Schneiderman, another leader of the 1909 strike and friend of Pauline Newman, spoke. The old Inquisition had its rack and its thumbscrews and its instruments of torture with iron teeth. We know what these things are today. The iron teeth are our necessities. The thumbscrews are the high-powered and swift machinery close to which we must work. And the rack is here in the fire-trap structures that will destroy us the minute they catch fire. Schneiderman's words moved the crowd. She had actually worked at the Triangle Factory. In May, the Factory Investigating Commission was established.
The committee that grew out of the big rally on April 2nd sent representatives to Albany to meet with legislative leaders for the purpose of having a statewide investigation, if possible. And probably the most important consequence of the Triangle Shirtwaist fire was the creation of the Factory Investigating Commission, which of course would then work for well nigh 3 years in investigating conditions all across the state, and then would ultimately put together what amounted to a new labor code for all of the state.
I mean, you have all these people running around saying, oh, I don't know whose fault this was. You even have the governor of the state of New York saying, I don't know if I can investigate this fire. And of course, the state legislature says, well, we can investigate this fire. And the outgrowth of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire is the founding of this Factory Inspection Commission.
And so it was that the Factory Investigating Commission, which sprang out of the ashes of this, made an investigation that took 4 years to complete. For what happened here awakened the people to the necessity of law, a democratic process of law to guard all of us and all of our brothers and sisters in their places of work.
Well, what they wanted was an investigating commission that would represent different elements, different constituencies. And so there were politicians, Smith Wagner, and there were Republicans as well on the commission. They chose what they called representatives of the public, and a person like Mary Dreyer would be sort of a public representative, but she, of course, was very much the Women's Trade Union League. Samuel Gompers served on the life of the commission, representing organized labor, and the commission began its work then. The two principal politicians involved here were, one, the Assembly Majority Leader, who at that time was Al Smith, and the Senate pro tem, who was really also the majority leader, and that was Robert F. Wagner.
And out of that investigation came two or three remarkable public careers. And out of the hearings and investigations of that commission, Alfred Smith learned about the facts of life for working people. And his career from that time on was one of service and help to them. And Robert Wagner, who was the chairman of that commission, the father of our present mayor, also learned his lesson. He had not known these things before, and he learned with horror in his eyes of the hazards that existed in every factory in the state of New York.
Well, the two of them really took the lead, and as it turned out, Wagner would become chair of the FIC, and Smith would become the vice chair of the FIC. 1913 was the year which witnessed the largest number of measures that passed the state legislature growing out of the commission. There were something like a total of 50 or 55 laws. Now, one of the major consequences of the Triangle Shirtwaist fire and the Factory Investigating Commission was that it pointed the Democratic Party in the direction of social and labor reform. And that became one of the major planks of the party platform in the days ahead. The context was there for the young Democratic leaders, the new politicians, who understood what was going on in the teeming city and who were willing, you see, to rise above what was then called neighborhood politics and really play an important role in the state legislature in fashioning reform that would mitigate some of these conditions.
When the Factory Inspection Commission is created by the New York State Legislature, you have a flow into it, a very unusual mix, a mix that had not really informed so much earlier legislative efforts of, you have the progressive reformers, labor union activists, and government officials who become some of the most important government officials in New York history, people like Robert Wagner, people like Alfred Smith, who will flow into this organization, go into this organization, and make a rough alliance.
The FIC was a relatively small group of people, 9 or 10 people. They called on experts. They had an expert on sanitation. They had, you know, consultants on fire standards. They had people like Francis Perkins, who was interested mainly in wages for women.
We learned that much worse conditions than the conditions in the Triangle Factory existed throughout the state, and it was our resolve and intention to prevent them. And so at the end of this period of investigation, we passed a series of laws, the like of which I think has never been seen in any four sessions of the legislature.
In fact, the regulatory system was such a horrible patchwork that it was really hard to figure out who was responsible. There was a state labor department, there were city fire marshals, there were building inspectors for the cities. No one was quite sure in all of these understaffed, ill-organized, and poorly manned bureaus whose business it was to make sure that they were in compliance. So you have this factory inspection commission that sits for 3.5 years, gathers countless evidences. You know, they don't just sit in Albany. They travel the state. They go into factories. They see the working conditions. The impact is made on them. The result is a total overhaul of New York's laboring laws. You have the beginning of things like mandated fire drills. You have the beginning of fire sprinkler systems put in the building. So not only is the building saved, but the human beings in it are saved. You have a host of laws. There's at least 34, 35 laws that come out of this commission's work. The most important part of it is the State Department of Labor is expanded dramatically. And it's given adequate funding and staffing that it can actually inspect the state's factories and bring about compliance.
Bear in mind that the two major figures involved here, Al Smith and Robert Wagner, had become professional politicians. They were aware of what was going on. I mean, Wagner came out from, you know, the German district of New York City, Yorkville. Smith was a product of the East Side. He knew what was going on. They had been somewhat supportive, especially Wagner, of aspects of social reform beforehand. But this was a golden opportunity for them to show leadership at a time when the Democratic Party really was the minority party in the state of New York. The Triangle Shirtwaist fire resulted in the Factory Investigating Commission. Factory Investigating Commission not only was successful in enacting an entirely new labor code for the state of New York, but showed that it was possible to do something via legislation. And it moved the Democratic Party, in this state in particular, very much in the direction of social and economic reform.
My first experience with the wage earner, I earned $2.50 a week, was on the Lower East Side.
I had to work from 8 o'clock in the morning to 5, and I had to work Saturday from 8 to 1. I was putting in 45 hours a week for $4. I would bring the envelope sealed to my mother.
I was earning $2.50 a week.
You were not allowed to sing. You were not allowed to talk to each other. Oh no, they would sneak up behind you.
We worked 12 hours a day, 6 days